learned about the normal process of elimination. Now we're going to look at some alterations in urinary elimination. And we've kind of talked about urinary retention already. I don't think I have an assessment slide. Yes, I do. But we're going to talk about all of these little doodads here, starting with urinary retention. So that's basically the urine's accumulating in the bladder. So the kidney can make the urine okay. The bladder just can't get rid of it. And we've already talked about some reasons why you might have that. Could be a neurological thing where the micturition reflex isn't responding properly, like neurogenic bladder. Or it could be the retention with overflow can develop where you have a little bit of urine escaping, like in a little dribble or a little uncontrollable burst of urine. And sometimes you see that with the enlarged prostate with the men sometimes. Some signs and symptoms of bladder distension. Now, can you imagine what it feels like to have a full bladder that cannot empty? Mm-hmm. How uncomfortable would that be? So you are going to be very uncomfortable. The discomfort's going to be there. You can get diaphoretic, sweaty, because from the pain, right? This is a very painful situation. And restless, like you're jumping out of the bed. When you're in the car driving and you really have to go, aren't you like hopping all over the place sometimes? That's the restlessness from, right? From a full bladder. I'm sure a lot of you have experienced the full bladder where you can't get to a bathroom in time. I mean, not in time, but like there isn't one readily available and you really have to empty your bladder and you can't. Now, I know this is a pretty, but look at that distended bladder, would you? Look at that, that's a bladder. Look how it's I mean, that is a distended bladder. So you're really gonna feel that. And that, this gentleman probably has a very enlarged prostate. And you know, they're having difficulty getting a catheter in, but that's a distended bladder. So, I mean, how would you assess for that? You're gonna palpate the abdomen, right? And you're gonna feel uncomfortable. Where are you gonna feel the bladder area? Right above the suprapubic. Because it's kind of low in the abdomen, right? See how low it is in the abdomen? So that's, I mean, you're gonna feel it almost like a little beach ball in there, you know, because it's so full of urine. This man definitely needs to have a catheter put in so that urine can be released. Okay, urinary tract infections, you know, everybody's probably had one sometime in their life. Affects millions of people a year. Most common hospital-acquired infection, most likely due to improper technique during catheter insertion. And bacteria in the urine can lead to the spread of these microorganisms in the bloodstream, which becomes a urosepsis. The sepsis originates in the urinary tract. UTI symptoms, you probably have all experienced this. Painful urination or burning on urination. Fever, chills, malaise are more later signs. The pain on urination is the earlier sign. You can get blood in your urine, but it's not necessarily blood that you see. It could be microscopic blood. How would you know? On the urinalysis exam, they look under the microscope at the urine so they can see the red blood cells. Sometimes you do see the blood in the urine, but sometimes it can be microscopic. If it gets bad enough and it travels up to the kidney, the infection, it can become pyelonephritis, where the kidney is actually inflamed, and then you're gonna get pain here, as opposed to pain on urination. You're gonna get flank pain, because that's where the kidneys sit in your body. And a fever, because it's becoming more systemic now, right? It's now not just in the urinary tract, but it's also in the kidney. So this is another one of the little things that go over urinary tract infections and polynephritis too. Okay, now incontinence. We don't like to talk about this, do we? Involuntary loss of urine. Who likes to involuntarily lose their urine? So you're like almost, you're wetting your pants basically, right? So it can be temporary or permanent. You no longer have control. And that's something we like to keep control of, right? Our bowels and our bladder. But do we see people who aren't able to keep control of these things, especially in the environments, the mobility? Issues like this can lead us to have urinary incontinence issues. The leakage can be intermittent or continuous, okay? So some kinds of incontinence. Now, functional means that the patient normally would be continent of urine, able to control the sphincters, go to the bathroom, release the you know, open the sphincter and release the urine. But what if the patient's waiting for a bedpan and waiting and waiting and waiting? And simply because they can't get out of bed and get to the bedpan, get to the bathroom themselves, they're incontinent. That's a functional incontinence. If they were able to get out of bed on their own, they would have been able to get to the bathroom. But because they're dependent on you bringing them a bedpan, they might be incontinent of urine. And how embarrassing is that for the patient? Okay? Overflow incontinence. What's overflow incontinence going to be?
Too much that it's done.
It's going to be loss of urine from a distended bladder, from a bladder that can't fill itself. So this is kind of what happens with that urinary retention issues. You got somebody like that man we just saw. He might get an overflow where there's a spasm with a release of a small amount of urine, but that he has no control over that. You see where that can happen? Or the dribbling, the little drops that come out that a man, this you're gonna see a lot of times with the prostate enlargement, they can't control it. Okay, so that's happens with, so you see overflow with prostate enlargement, sometimes with diabetes, and with fecal impaction, if the colon is impacted with feces, it can cause a overflow also. Now reflex is basically due to spinal cord dysfunction. So we don't have coordination with the upper the brain functioning in the brainstem and the micturition center in the spine. So this is going to be mostly your spinal cord injuries. And they have an unawareness of bladder filling and a lack of an urge to void. So they don't feel that they have to go. And they're not aware that their bladder's filling. Their kidneys are working, but there's that sense that sensation isn't being transported to the head. Okay? So what do you think these people are going to need? Catheters. Because they have no awareness that their bladder's filling. So they're going to need permanent catheters. Okay, so this is pretty much going to be your spinal cord injury people. Stress incontinence, weak pelvic floor muscles. You laugh, you cough, you sneeze, you pee. Okay, weak. So what would help that? Kegel exercises. Sometimes there's surgeries that they can do to help change the way the muscles are. They tighten the muscles up a little bit. They do called a pelvic sling. So there are surgeries. Does somebody want to go through surgery for a little bit of stress incontinence? What do we see? Depends. There's urinary incontinence pads, big market for them now, right? So if you got a little bit of release of urine, like when you sneeze or you cough, they also use biofeedback to help with stress incontinence. So stress incontinence, as I said, isn't like stress, like you're anxious. The stress is the sneeze, because doesn't that put stress on the pelvic floor muscles? Okay, so that's what it's going to be. Like you lift something up, you laugh, you play tennis, you release a little bit of urine uncontrollably. It just has to be how much does it impact your life. You know, if you're constantly soaking your pants a little bit, you know, it's not necessarily a very pleasant thing, right? And urge incontinence is that gotta go, gotta go, gotta go kind of thing. Like you know, every time you get somewhere, you gotta find the bathroom type thing. So you get the urge, the bladder muscle gets this urge to go as soon as a little bit of urine is in there. Okay, so that's urge, a decreased bladder capacity. And bladder irritants like caffeine can add to urge incontinence. And there are medications out there like Detrol, Vesicare. It's a big market now, a lot of people out there with urge incontinence. It's an uncontrollable, like you're fine. Walking down the street, everything's wonderful. And then all of a sudden, I gotta go. Like it just comes out of nowhere. Yeah, this comes out of nowhere. And like you got to get to a bathroom or else you just sweat yourself. So I mean, these are people live with these things, okay? And this is just showing you, it's a picture with the three of the different types of incontinence, okay? And I just happened to put this picture from The Bone Collector. Did you ever see The Bone Collector with Denzel Washington and Queen Latifah? Queen Latifah was his nurse. So at one point in the movie, Denzel has a seizure. Okay, he used to get these seizures because he had a big major spinal cord injury and he was a quadriplegic. It's a great movie if you ever want to see it. But there's people with reflex incontinence can get something called autonomic dysreflexia. You don't have to write this down, it's just informational. Autonomic dysreflexia. Basically what happens, the bladder fills so much with urine that it says he signals to the brain, and the brain ends up having a seizure. So what happened in the movie was his Foley catheter was kinked, and he ended up having a seizure. So if you ever watch that movie and he has a seizure and Queen Latifah comes over and straightens out his catheter, and then he's fine. So you'll know what's happening. So that's just why I happen to have that there. And this is talking about, these pictures show the autonomic dysreflexia. So urinary diversions. Sometimes individuals, we have to divert the urine away from the kidneys. So we can have different urinary diversions, like we have to remove their bladder. So there's no place to store the urine anymore. So there's different diversions that we can have. Like, you know how a colostomy would be for a diversion for stool? We can have the same kind of stoma effect for a diversion for urine. So there's different pouches. A ureteroscopy would be, they bring the ureters, like the bladder is no longer going to be used, they bring the ureter out to the skin and make a little stoma, and then a bag would hang off of that. Okay, they can be temporary or sometimes permanent. A nephrostomy would be a tube right into the kidney. And I got a picture coming up. Now, these surgeries, you can read about them in your book. I'm not going to ask you questions on the surgical procedures for urinary diversions. Just know urinary diversions exist, and you can read over them in your book. But these are showing, this is called a transureteroureteroscopy. That's a mouthful, isn't it? And they're bringing out, see how they're bringing both ureters out to a stoma here? And then a pouch would hang off of that. This is a continent urinary diversion where the kidneys, they make like, they're no longer using the bladder anymore for whatever reason. And you can catheterize this little pouch. So there's all different, sometimes different urinary diversions that you'll see. Okay, and then the stoma is smaller than what a colostomy stoma would look like because it's only a little piece of ureter. Okay? Again, these are just showing some of the different surgeries that you can do. But basically, they're bypassing the bladder. Usually, bladder cancer is the reason why people have these done, for bladder cancer. And that's what the little pouch bag would look like. You see, it has a little spigot on the end, so you can dump it into the toilet. You would wear these pouches on your abdomen, though. Okay, and this is showing a nephrostomy. And these you sometimes see in the hospital after major kidney infections and things like that. You'll see the tube go into the kidney, and then there'll be a drainage bag. See where the tube is here? And that's what it would look like in the patient. See, that's the back, the flank part. And then it would be draining urine. That's called a nephrostomy tube. That goes right into the kidney. Okay, reasons for diversions. These are just some reasons that you might have a urinary diversion. That kind of surgery might be required. Okay, chronic cystitis. That's chronic bladder infections, where you constantly have a bladder infection. Okay, and the painful bladder syndromes, where you're constantly in pain, like terrible pain. To have this kind of surgery, it would have to be pretty bad, right? Okay, I'm going to just skip the clicker question for right now because I'll go back to them. I want to get done the lecture because we got to still do the bow. Okay, so assessment, you want to go through urinary patterns with the patient, how often they urinate, how much they're drinking. Physical assessment would come look at inspection. Do you see any masses? Is there anything visible that you can see? I mean, there really isn't too much with palpation with the kidney other than what? Bladder distension, right? You could palpate bladder distension. So look at the color of the urine, the clarity. Is there any odor to it? Now, usually your urine's darker when? In the morning and then lighter as the day, and especially if you drink, the urine gets lighter. We can do urine testing and specimen collection. That would be a routine urinalysis. You can do urine specimens for electrolytes. Blood studies would include the BUN and creatinine, which is coming up, I think, the blood study. Oh, here's the, there's a slide coming up that shows that. Some other diagnostic studies that might be done to diagnose kidney disease. You could do a cystoscopy, which is basically introducing a scope through the urethra into the bladder. And they can do this to sometimes get rid of the kidney stones, too. Do a cystoscopy. They can do arteriograms to look at the blood flow to the kidneys. So these are just some of the different tests that could be done. Urine specimen collection. A clean catch urine would be for a sterile urine specimen. You can do that through catheterizing the patient using sterile technique. Or has anyone ever done a urine specimen that's considered sterile for the doctor's office? You would wash your hands, wash your urinary meatus, whether it's a man or a woman, you would clean the area very well. You start voiding, they call it midstream clean catch. You start voiding to kind of break that mucus plug seal, and you don't want that mucus plug to be in the specimen, so you start voiding, stop your flow, put the cup underneath, and then urinate in the cup mid-flow. And the reason for that is to just let that bacteriostatic plug, remember we talked about that in the beginning, let that pass first, so you don't want to catch that in the cup. So, and then there's timed urine specimens, and usually they're in these big jugs like this, where they want to take the urine for a full 24 hours. So if the patient's on a catheter bag, you just empty the catheter bag into one of these containers. Or if the patient is voiding, you instruct them to save all their urine in the bathroom for you, like in the hat, the little collector. Everybody know what a hat is? It's a little device that you can sit on the toilet seat that'll collect the urine. I have a picture of one coming up. But then all the urine gets saved into that container and then sent down to the lab. Okay? This is the catheter bag. And see this port right here? This is a port now where you can put those a syringe in without the needle and like kind of screw it in there and then just pull back urine so that you don't have to use a needle to access the line here. Everything's trying to be needleless now. So with the lower lock systems of the syringes, the syringe would fit right into this port right here and you could pull back urine for a sterile specimen if they have a catheter. You would never take the specimen from the urine bag for the most part, especially if you want a sterile specimen because this urine is old. It's been sitting there. It possibly could be growing bacteria. So you always want to take the urine specimen closest to the patient. And this is the port that is the first port after the, this is the catheter itself right here that would go into the patient. Have all of you seen what a catheter looks like in a patient? In your clinicals. And these are some other testing that you can do. They're talked about in your book. Culture would tell you what bacteria are growing in the urine. Okay? That's the hat. You would put that on the toilet bowl rim and then put the seat back over top of it and see where there's graduation. So if the patient urinates into that, you can measure how much urine is in there. Okay, these are some nursing diagnoses that you might come up with based on certainly body image disturbance with some of the urinary diversions, right? And implementation, promoting proper micturition. Now, when we urinate, men usually do what? Stand, women sit. So you gotta keep that in mind. Some of your male patients might need to stand to void. So what do we need to watch out for? Risk for falls. So you might need to be with them or at least nearby, you know, because privacy will be an issue sometimes. People can't urinate if somebody's standing right over them. So you want to try to, when you put your patient on a bedpan, a female patient should be sitting up, right? Give them privacy, close the curtain. Think about yourself sitting on a bedpan. How would you be most comfortable? Not at all, right? Some people just tell me, I can't go on a bedpan. But sometimes they're on strict bed rest. You can't get them out of bed. They have to use the bedpan. So you want to try to make it as normal as possible for them. Medications, we talked about, certainly there's medications that are going to make people urinate. There are some medications that cause you not to urinate, like the urge incontinence medication. So there are certainly going to be medications that we can give that will help, antibiotics for bladder infections. Catheterization. We don't like to do it because it can lead to urinary tract infection, but sometimes we have to use indwelling catheters. Indwelling means that it has that little balloon apparatus that helps to keep, if you read your chapter, you saw the pictures, and I have some pictures coming up, the balloon keeps the catheter in the bladder. Now, you can also do a straight catheterization. The straight catheterization, the sterile tube does not have the balloon on the end, so you're simply putting it into the bladder to withdraw whatever urine is in the bladder at that moment in time, and then you remove it. Indwelling means you're planning for it to stay in for a length of time. So to prevent it from falling out, you have to inflate the balloon, which kind of, it keeps it in the bladder. So I've got a picture of what that looks like coming up. You can do catheter irrigations. Now remember I talked about the transurethral resection of the prostate, where someone might have a very enlarged prostate, and the surgeon will go in and cut away areas of the prostate. Now, when we cut, what's going to happen? You're going to have bleeding. So these patients have very bloody urine. So they want to do an irrigation. So the catheter will have an extra port on it where they instill normal saline continuously through that catheter. It goes into the bladder and then out the catheter to help cut down on the bleeding. So what you will see with TURP, transurethral resection of the prostate, or somebody that has very, very bloody urine, because they don't want it to clot up and block off the catheter, they'll instill what we call continuous bladder irrigation, or CBI. Continuous bladder irrigation, and normally it's normal saline that'll be used. And usually use bigger catheter bags, and sometimes even bigger Foley catheters themselves. Because normal catheter bags only hold about what? 1,500? These bags, when they have continuous bladder irrigation, they're usually larger bags that hold like 3,000 mLs.
So a Foley catheter, is that an indwelling catheter?
Yes, a Foley is a brand name for an indwelling catheter.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Foley's a brand name.
Okay.
They just call, everybody calls it Foley, but it's really an indwelling catheter.
Like
Foley
tissue.
Is like somebody's name, like Mr. Foley invented it.
Okay.
But they're all called Foley catheters, though.
Okay.
But it is, that's a name. Catheter care, routine catheter care is just soap and water. Just, if your patient has a catheter, you have to clean around it. That could be something you do every evening. Just because, you know, it's you want to keep that area extra clean. But you don't have to put anything special on that, the area that the catheter inserts into the meatus there. Just routine soap and water is all you need. And that would be the perineal care. Suprapubic catheterization. Sometimes when you have people that have those, they have that retention problem, they'll put a catheter through the abdomen. And that's, you see men with suprapubic catheters. So the catheter is inserted through the abdomen and then drains the urine. Okay? So this is also talked about in your book if you want to get into it a little bit more. And then we have external urinary catheters. This is going to be more for men. We call it a condom catheter. Just like it says, it looks like a condom. But it's attached to a urinary drainage bag. And the condom part has like an adhesive on it that would stick to the penis. So for men who you don't want to put a catheter in, if you put the condom catheter on, if they're incontinent of urine, it saves their skin because they're not necessarily laying in a wet bed. So the condom catheter works real well. If you can kind of visualize, it's a clear condom that is attached to a drainage bag. And I think I might have a picture coming up that you can see. Female urinals, haven't seen too many of them. But I mean, the urinals, everybody knows what a urinal looks like. It's something that a man can, I think I've got a picture of a urinal coming up, but it's very easy for a man to urinate in a urinal. Women, you pretty much have to go on a bedpan. Can you see, like, sticking something here? And, you know, it doesn't really convert well, but there are such things as female urinals. Question? I saw a hand up.
Oh, yeah. Do you need a doctor's order?
For a condom catheter, no.
Yeah.
Condom catheter, you do not need a doctor's order. You could, if you've got an incontinent patient, and that's going to be more, it's man, these are just for men.
Yeah.
You do not, but for an indwelling catheter or straight catheterization, yes, you need an order for that. That does require an order. And maintaining skin integrity. Urine will break down the skin. You've probably seen it already. You want to use moisture barrier creams on these incontinent patients. Change them as quickly as possible. In the nursing homes, are you using diapers?
Yeah,
diapers aren't good for the skin. Now, hospital, they don't really want you using diapers. I know the nursing home wants you using diapers, but is a diaper an excuse for not changing your patient more frequently? No, and these diapers aren't like Pampers. They don't wick the urine away. How many of you have seen excoriated or denuded skin because of these people sitting in diapers? Moisture barrier creams and keeping them as dry as possible. It's a sin, isn't it? Because, I mean, this is very, very painful. Plus, it's really hurting their skin integrity and then preventing infection. So this is a suprapubic catheter. See how it's going through the abdomen? Condom catheter. The ones I've seen are clear, but these are white. But you see how it really looks like a condom? And then this part would be attached to the drainage bag. But there's an adhesive on the inside, and you roll them up, just like the same way you would put a condom on. Not that you're all experts at putting condoms on. I don't mean that by any means. Sorry about that. You gotta inject humor sometimes, right? It's been a long night. All right, what do you think that is?
Urinal.
Female urinal. I've never even seen one. Never even seen one. Suprapubic catheter. That's what that looks like, suprapubic catheter. These are different catheters, Foley catheters, indwelling catheters. See the balloon? Now the balloon isn't inflated when you put it in. You inflate it once you put it in. That's not going through the urethra like this, folks. Okay? Now notice what's different here. This is the straight one. There's no balloon on it. And this is the port that inflates the balloon right here. And it's usually 10 mls of sterile saline that's in there. Now notice this one has an extra port. Some of them have that extra port, see it? That's for the irrigation. This is called a three-way catheter. These are two-way. Your standard catheters look like this. There's different sizes based on the size of the urethra. Women, we tend to use larger sizes. The smaller the number, the smaller the catheter in this case. So 12 would be a smaller catheter than an 18 catheter, 18 gauge. Now, for women, we tend to use 14 or 16 gauge catheters. Men, usually a little smaller because of the prostate issue. Go ahead.
Do they have different sizes for children?
This one probably would be a children. They would go even smaller, 10, 9, 8, they go smaller. They probably do have smaller lengths too.
Okay.
I just haven't seen children size, but I'm sure they do, because where would you put all this extra in a child?
Yeah.
So I'm sure there are smaller sizes for pediatrics. Okay, this is before the balloon's inflated and after. And this is basically showing, you see the bladder, the urethra, and then the balloon's inflated. See how the balloon just rests there over the sphincter? And that's what keeps it in place. But keep in mind, if a patient pulls that out, ouch is right. So you don't, usually they have a little device that will affix the catheter tubing to the leg so the patient doesn't pull on it. Okay, so there'll be some kind of anchoring device to the leg that you'll see used in the hospitals and most likely in your nursing homes to keep the bag, and this is a leg bag right here. If somebody had this catheter all the time, they could put their pants on and walk around with it. That's a leg bag. This is the drainage bag that would be emptied once a shift. Again, you would wear gloves, measure it into a graduated container so you could measure it and then enter it into the intake and output. Okay? Straight catheter, and then the one with the balloon, just showing you the difference in the tips. Okay, and then this is the drainage bag. And this is just showing you some excoriation, denuded skin from perineal, from incontinence, what that looks like. And you want to use the barrier creams to protect the skin. Skin care is very important when you've got urinary incontinence. You want to protect that skin. How many of you are using barrier creams in your, good. Even if you suspect them to be, if they're this bad, they really need a thick cream, almost like a Desitin type cream. So, I mean, you'll have different thicknesses of creams. The thicker the cream, the more it protects. And you really want to lather it on. Get it on there thick, because that'll help protect. Okay, let me get the bowel. The bowel's shorter.
We have a half an hour.